not a sprain or an itch. Pain, rash, swelling, or twitch. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. Before we start talking about the topic of the day, we need to define a few terms. First up is autoimmune disease. Now, interestingly, an autoimmune disease is a condition in which your own immune system mistakenly attacks your body. Now, normally the immune system protects you from germs like bacteria, fungi, and viruses. When it senses these foreign invaders, it sends out an army of fighter cells to attack them. That's what it does normally.
Fortunately, the immune system can tell the difference between foreign cells and your own cells.
Unfortunately, in an autoimmune disease, the immune system mistakes part of your body, like your joints or skin, as foreign. It attacks by releasing proteins that are called autoantibodies that attack the healthy cells.
Some autoimmune diseases target only one organ. For example, in type 1 diabetes, the autoantibodies only damage the pancreas. In other diseases, like lupus, they affect the whole body.
The first question that most people ask is, why? Why does the immune system attack the body? Well, that's still an open question.
Some people are more likely to get an autoimmune disease than others. Certain autoimmune diseases, like multiple sclerosis and lupus, run in families.
Not every family member will necessarily have the same disease, but they do inherit a susceptibility to an autoimmune condition.
Over the past several decades, the incidence of autoimmune diseases is rising.
That again poses a question. Why? Why is it rising? Most researchers suspect environmental factors like infections and exposure to chemicals or solvents that could also be involved.
Could it be our Western diet? Is that a trigger? Eating high fat, high sugar, and highly processed foods is linked to inflammation, which might set off an immune response.
Another theory is called the hygiene hypothesis. Because of vaccines and antiseptics, children today aren't exposed to as many germs as they were in the past. This lack of exposure could make their immune system overreact to harmless substances.
There are more than 80 different autoimmune diseases.
Carmen is going to give us a list of the 14 most common. So let's start with type 1 diabetes.
Normally, the pancreas produces the hormone insulin, which helps to regulate blood sugar levels. However, in type 1 diabetes, the immune system attacks and destroys the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. The result in that high blood sugar can damage blood vessels as well as organs like the heart, kidney, eyes, and nerves.
Next, we have rheumatoid arthritis, where the autoimmune system attacks the joints. Unlike osteoarthritis, which affects people as they get older, RA can start as early as your 30s or even earlier.
Third in our list is psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. Skin cells normally grow and then shed when they are no longer needed. Psoriasis causes skin cells to multiply too quickly. The extra cells build up and form red, scaly patches called scales or plaques on the skin. About 30% of people with psoriasis also develop swelling, stiffness, and pain in their joints. This form of the disease is called psoriatic arthritis.
We also have multiple sclerosis, which damages the protective coating that surrounds the nerve cells called the myelin sheath. Damage to this affects the transmission of messages between your brain and your body. Now, this damage can lead to symptoms like numbness, weakness, balance issues, and even trouble walking.
Systemic lupus erythematosus is fairly common disease and is fifth in our list. It actually affects many organs, including the joints, kidneys, brain, and heart, along with joint pain, fatigue, and rashes.
We hear a lot about the next item in our list on many TV and radio ads, inflammatory bowel disease. This is a condition that causes inflammation in the lining of the intestines. Now, there are generally two types of IBS.
Crohn's disease can inflame any part of the GI tract, from the mouth to the anus, while ulcerative colitis affects only the lining of the large intestine, colon, and rectum.
Almost halfway through the list, we have Addison's disease that affects the adrenal glands. Now, you may not be very familiar with these organs, but the adrenal glands produce the hormones cortisol and aldosterone. Having too little of these hormones can affect the way the body uses and stores carbohydrates and sugars. Symptoms here include weakness, fatigue, weight loss, and low blood sugar.
A disease that attacks another gland is Graves' disease, which attacks a thyroid gland in the neck, causing it to produce too much of its hormones. The thyroid hormones, which control the body's energy usage or metabolism.
What happens when you have too much hormone produced? This revs up your body's activities and causes symptoms like nervousness, a fast heartbeat, heat intolerance, and weight loss.
We also have the autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where instead of revving up the body with excess thyroid hormone, the thyroid gland produces too little thyroid hormone.
Symptoms include weight gain, sensitivity to cold, fatigue, hair loss, and swelling of the thyroid, which is called goiter. If you have joint pain along with dry eyes and mouth, you may be suffering from another autoimmune disease called Sjogren's syndrome.
Myasthenia gravis, next in our list, affects nerves that help the brain control the muscles. When these nerves are impaired, signals cannot direct the muscle to move. The most common symptom is muscle weakness that gets worse with activity and improves with rest.
One big problem in myasthenia gravis is that often muscles that control swallowing and facial movements are involved. If the immune system attacks blood vessels, then we have something called vasculitis. The inflammation that results narrows the arteries and veins and allows less blood to flow through them.
There is a protein called intrinsic factor that helps the intestine absorb vitamin B12 from food. Without this vitamin, the body cannot make enough red blood cells. This disease is called pernicious anemia.
There's also a disease where people cannot eat food containing gluten. You've probably seen loads of foods in the supermarket that are marked gluten-free.
People with celiac disease cannot eat foods containing gluten, which is a protein found in wheat, rye, and other grain products. When gluten is in the intestine, the immune system attacks it and causes inflammation.
Many people in the U.S. have gluten sensitivity, but only 1 in 100 suffer from celiac disease.
There are some early symptoms of many autoimmune diseases, such as fatigue, achy muscles, swelling and redness, low-grade fever, trouble concentrating, numbness and tingling in the hands and feet, hair loss, and skin rashes.
Individual diseases can also have their own unique symptoms, like in type 1 diabetes, where symptoms also include extreme thirst, weight loss, and fatigue. Now, in the past decade, the number of school-aged kids with peanut allergies has doubled. Doubled. Why?
Theories abound, though, and most involve an overactive immune system. According to Annie Munoz-Furlong, CEO of the nonprofit Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, we have done such a good job of eliminating the threats that the immune system is supposed to manage. that is looking for something to do. She says that parents feed their kids more handy snacks these days, and many of those contain peanuts or their derivatives.
According to Ms. Munoz Furlong, we're bombarding the immune system with these food-based allergens, so it's attacking those instead. It is true that food allergies in general are on the rise.
But peanuts seem to trigger especially violent immune reactions. This might be because they contain several proteins not found in most other foods, and the structure of these proteins stimulates a strong immune response.
Research suggests that roasting peanuts, as American companies do, might alter the protein shape, making them an even bigger target. Allergy rates are lower in China, where it's customary to boil peanuts, which actually damages the proteins less.
Typically, the immune system treats peanuts as safe, but some scientists believe that early and heavy exposure to peanut products might cause it to misidentify them as dangerous.
This theory is strengthened by the fact that 8 out of 10 allergic kids have a reaction the first time they eat a peanut, indicating a previous indirect exposure, possibly even in the womb or through breast milk. Or maybe it's all the video games. Huh?
Scientists think vitamin D, which the body needs sunlight to make, helps the immune system label substances as not dangerous and thus build up a tolerance.
Children who spend less time outdoors tend to be deficient in vitamin D, so their body might mislabel peanut proteins as dangerous. Parents looking to protect their kids might consider sending them outside and not washing their hands every time they come home.
Getting back to treatment of autoimmune diseases, the findings of a new study might hold promise for the future.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Just before the mid-show break, Carmen was telling us about some of the treatments of autoimmune diseases and a new study which might hold promise for the future.
Researchers suggest that targeting a specific gut bacterium could help to prevent autoimmune disease.
In the study, researchers from Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, discovered that bacteria in the small intestine can travel to other organs and induce an autoimmune response. Importantly, the team also found that this reaction can be treated by targeting those bacteria with an antibiotic or vaccine.
As we said many times, in autoimmune disease, the immune system mistakenly attacks healthy cells and tissues. According to the National Institute of Health, NIH, around 23.5 million people in the United States are affected by autoimmune diseases.
A variety of autoimmune conditions have been linked to bacteria in the gut. A Yale research team specifically looked at the bacterium called Enterococcus gallinarum, E. gallinarum for short, which can travel beyond the gut to the spleen, lymph nodes, and the liver.
The team found that E. gallinarum provoked an autoimmune response in the mice when it traveled beyond the gut. The researchers also found E. gallinarum to be present in the livers of people who have autoimmune disease.
By administering an antibiotic or vaccine to target the E. gallinarum, the scientists then found that it was possible to suppress the autoimmune reaction in the research mice and prevent the bacterium from growing.
According to one of the studies, authors Martin Kriegel, that by blocking the pathway leading to inflammation, they could reverse the effect of this bug on autoimmunity.
This is not the only study that implicates gut bacteria in autoimmune disease. Studies in mice, for example, have found that the colonization of the gut by some bacteria can lay the groundwork for the development of autoimmune disorders in the future.
These bacteria can cause changes in the tissue of the gut, resulting in the production of antibodies that attack cells in conditions such as systemic lupus.
A previous study suggested that altering gut bacteria might help to alleviate lupus symptoms.
The study, published in the journal Applied and Environmental Microbiology, showed that a species of lactobacillus in the gut of a lupus mouse model were linked to a reduction of lupus symptoms, while the Lactobacillus bacteria were associated with worsening symptoms of lupus.
The use of probiotics, prebiotics, and antibiotics, said Houston Zhang, first author of that study, has the potential to alter the microbiota dysbiosis, which in turn could improve lupus symptoms.
Remember that not all gut bacteria are bad. Some researchers have revealed how they could help to prevent cancer. It seems to be common sense that our diet influences the bacteria in our gut.
This in turn can alter the behavior of our genes and the risk of cancer. The good bacteria in our intestines offers a protective barrier against harmful viruses, but they can also influence our genes' behavior.
According to the National Cancer Institute, NCI, colorectal cancer is the fourth most common cancer type after breast, lung, and prostate.
In 2017, the NCI estimated 135,430 new cases of this cancer, with more than 50,000 people dying from the disease. The link between the gut bacteria and the risk of colorectal cancer has received more and more attention in recent years. A new study led by Dr. Patrick Varga-Wise from the Brabham Institute in Cambridge in the United Kingdom shows how gut bacteria can affect genes, which then influences disease risk. Their experiments with mice and human culture cells focused on the role of molecules which are called short-chain fatty acids, SCFAs, in disease prevention.
These short-chain fatty acids are produced by gut bacteria during the digestion of fruits and vegetables. They can move from the gut bacteria into our gut lining cells, affecting our genes and our cells' behavior.
You might be asking yourself, how can these affect or regulate gene activity? The researchers used antibiotics to reduce the bacteria in the mice guts, and they analyzed their fecal samples as well as cells from the intestinal epithelium, that is the lining inside the small intestines. Then the research team added SCFAs to human colon cancer cells and found that they increased protein modifications that can switch genes on and off.
These changes were produced by inhibiting a protein called HDAC2, and previous studies have shown that a high number of HDAC2 proteins may raise the risk of colorectal cancer.
Additionally, the bacteria-deprived mice showed a high number of HDAC2 proteins. Fruits and vegetables are key for producing SCFAs, and SCFAs help to regulate the protein modifications.
So the findings suggest that regulating those modifications in the gut cell genome may prevent cancer, and that a healthful diet of fruit and vegetables is key for this prevention.
Remember that our intestine is the home of countless bacteria that help in the digestion of foods such as plant fibers. They also act as a barrier to harmful bacteria and, in effect, educate our immune system. The research shows how the short-chain fatty acids contribute to the regulation of proteins that package the genome, and thus they affect gene activity.
a deeper understanding of this mass of neural tissue filled with important neurotransmitters is revealing that it does much more than merely handle digestion or inflict the occasional nervous pang.
Little brain in our innards, in connection with the big one in our skulls, partly determines our mental state and plays key roles in certain diseases throughout the body.
Whoa, a second brain.
Well, have you heard the term gut feeling? Although its influence is far-reaching, the second brain is not the seat of any conscious thoughts or decision-making. As Michael Gerson, chairman of the Department of Anatomy and Cell Biology at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Columbia University Medical Center, says, the second brain doesn't help with the great thought processes. Religion, philosophy, and poetry is left to the brain and the head, but it does a very important job in our bodies.
This gut brain is technically known as the enteric nervous system. This second brain consists of sheets of nerve cells embedded in the walls of the long tube of our gut, which measures around 25 feet end to end from the esophagus to the anus.
The second brain contains some, and I love these big numbers, 100 million neurons more than either the spinal cord or the peripheral nervous system. This multitude of neurons in the enteric nervous system enables us to feel the inner world of our gut and its contents.
Much of this neural firepower controls digestion, including breaking down food, absorbing nutrients, and expelling of waste, which requires chemical processing, mechanical mixing, and rhythmic muscle contractions that move everything on down the line.
Thus equipped with its own reflexes and senses, this second brain can control gut behavior independently of the brain. But this second brain is way too complicated to have evolved only to make sure things move out of your colon.
Scientists were shocked to learn that about 90% of the fibers in the primary visceral nerve, the vagus nerve, carries information from the gut to the brain and not the other way around.
The second brain informs our state of mind in other more obscure ways as well. A big part of our emotions are probably influenced by the nerves in our guts. Maybe that's where the term butterflies in the stomach comes from.
And although gastrointestinal turmoil can sour one's moods, everyday emotional well-being may rely on messages from the brain below to the brain above.
For example, electrical stimulation of the vagus nerve, a useful treatment for depression, may mimic these signals. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We've also set up a website for our Medical Marijuana Society at www.medmarsoc.com. That's www.medmarsoc.com. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining. And with this, we leave you till next week to continue talking about the brain in our guts.
From all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.
WBOB AM 600.